Hello and welcome to episode 132 of the Nerds Assemble podcast.
This week we'll be talking about the preservation of video games.
Hi, I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
As ever, if you want to find notes for this episode, just go to www.nerdassemble.co.uk. If you want to tweet us right now for some insane reason, you can do that at Nerds Podcast. All one word. But we're kind of free-forming a bit. We're actually technically in between formats at the moment, and we're hoping to have something a bit different for you at the beginning of May. Speaking of the beginning of May, because this is kind of something we should probably tell you about before we forget. We want you guys to join us in watching over the bank holiday weekend the existing Star Wars films, or rather five of the existing Star Wars films, in what we previously discussed as the Machete Order. We will have a link to this, and what order you need to watch these on in the show notes. But basically, this involves watching the Star Wars films in the order of fourth, then fifth, then second, then third, and then sixth. We're going to try and watch these films in that order, and then we're going to try and talk about them on May 4th in time for the podcast that you'll be getting on May 5th.
If I may just, jump in there and remind people, the Machete Order, the idea behind that is that you watch 4 and 5. 5, of course, Empire Strikes Back, ends with the, "Luke, I am your father." No! And then you watch 2 and 3. I know. I'm sorry. And also Planet of the Apes is Earth. And the Titanic sinks. And then 2 and 3. I know. I'm sorry. Also, bastard. Hitler dies.
Good job.
But 2 and 3 are basically like an extended flashback of how Anakin Skywalker became Darth Vader. And then, of course, we rejoin with the last of the original trilogy. And it works like that.
I'm actually looking forward to trying to watch them in this order. I think it could be quite enjoyable.
So was I, because I really was not looking forward to watching the, prequels again.
Yeah, if you've been listening, there's a certain film missing that came out.
No, there isn't. Point. It doesn't exist.
No, there isn't.
Yeah. Phantom Menace is not in this list.
The Phantom what?
Yeah, exactly. So.
The one with the N64 game that was some weird thing from it.
So what we are trying to say is, please join us in watching over the bank holiday weekend the Machete Order of the Star Wars films, and then once we've all talked about it on here, you'll be able to catch up with our discussion, see if you share similar thoughts on that on May 5th. If you want to tweet at us about the Machete Order prior to that, we will read out comments, or if you want to email us at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. But probably tweet us, because part of the new show format will also involve us moving to a new website, and that could hopefully won't be too messy.
We've been relocated
to a better place.
That's probably will be
far, far away.
But anyway, I suppose now that we've been talking about ourselves, that we should probably talk about that particular trailer that landed.
Yes.
This week, that included some really prize sort of eBay items. So really, I would buy that.
Buy what?
I can't remember the name of the type of ship.
The Star Destroyer.
There we go, Star Destroyer
on eBay.
Slightly used.
Yeah, slightly used. It's fine. I mean, that reminds me of when the one time I looked at the, when the coalition government came in and it scrapped a whole load of our naval fleet, and I looked at the auction website where you could buy the former ships. There were some good deals going on there. Some really good deals. Rock bottom prices.
£2.50 and £5,000 shipping.
Well, that's all right, because if you have the Star Destroyer, I'll just have BB-8. He was cool.
Okay.
that something is free so long as you can actually just pick up and collect.
I can pick the BB-8 up. I'll leave the Star Destroyer to him and he's putting her back for her car.
So, yeah, what did people actually make of the second Star Wars trailer for Episode 7?
I have renewed faith. It was full of just brilliant little antidotes that made me feel like a kid again.
Yeah, watching it, I was 12.
Yeah.
Definitely. Wait, because you were watching a 12-year-old version of you watching it?
No, that would be creepy.
What are you trying to say?
So watching it, it's like, oh God, I want a toy of that, and I want a toy of that, and I want a toy of him, toy of her, so I can put them in the toys of that and that, and then I can fly them around the garden. He's going,
you know what's going to be interesting is that if this is going to be as epic as the first trilogy, this will be a brand new generation of Star Wars fans that could be created from this. It's quite exciting. This could be history in the making.
I actually watched the live stream. I was just I did not know it was going to happen, and I was randomly, you know, just going through my Twitter timeline.
Yeah.
And it said, you know, live stream from the Star Wars convention is starting in a few minutes. Here, and it's like click. It's like okay, I might as well. So I watched the whole presentation, including them getting the Brits. Two Brit blokes who helped build some of the droids, who they discovered at conventions because they'd built them and brought them to conventions and such. And it's like, we have to employ these guys. So they had the new R2-D2 from from the film, which of course looks like the old one, which is the point. But all of that kind of thing, and it's like, oh, this is just absolutely fantastic. And the little BB-8.
Sounds like he's trying to build something in the background there.
Yeah, live on the it's not here. it was actual a physical thing live on the stage, and that sort of rolled around, had it sort of moving its head around and all that kind of thing, and it's just that's fantastic. What one? I am 12.
It was brilliant, wasn't it?
And what was encouraging was J.J. Abrams saying, but not mentioning the prequels as a comparison. Yes. We built as much physical props and sets as possible because it helps with the action and then it helps with the actors.
Mm. Yeah.
Instead of, you're standing in front of a green screen, it's actually a waterfall, and if you can imagine that stick that we're holding up above your head is some kind of creature, then that would be great. Which was part of the problem with the prequels, because everything just looked slightly off.
Yeah.
A lot of the scenes. But they're saying as much as possible with this, with physical sets, physical props. And I thought it was hard not to take that as a bit of a, we noticed what happened with those, so we're trying to avoid that.
I suppose you can get away with doing that, though, can't you?
I'm more excited by these films than I was about the prequel films, because when the prequel films came out, I wasn't as much of a geek because there were no geeks in my family other than for cars and racing at the time. And so nobody, I wasn't really introduced to the Star Wars films at all until I was partway through my teens. So I'm getting a little bit more excited about this because I'm actually more aware of it.
Yeah, my dad's always been quite a big geek. Really, he's like Star Wars and Star Trek and whatnot. I do prefer Star Trek over Star Wars. So when J.J. Abrams announced that he was kind of doing the Star Wars, prequel, the Star Wars sequels, I was like, no, slightly. But I mean, I know I'm kind of warm into the idea.
I think he might be more of a natural fit to Star Wars than Star Trek.
Yeah, the reboot. I really love the first film.
I thought it was good. Not brilliant, but I was happy with it.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, Into Darkness was just...
I thought it was shite.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I didn't think it was shite, but it didn't feel as fresh.
and stuff.
Meanwhile,
there were so many references back to the original Star Trek films.
Yeah.
They did every single one of them worse.
It felt like it was a film designed to be watched if you've already seen Wrath of Khan.
And to me, as I said back when I saw it on the podcast as well, that the whole thing reminded me more of Star Trek Nemesis than it did Wrath of Khan.
Mm.
And I preferred Star Trek Nemesis.
Have you ever seen the How It Should Have Ended for Star Trek Into Darkness?
No.
Because that is absolutely brilliant. You should go on YouTube and watch that.
I'll have to. Is it just, okay, shouldn't have bothered, just watch Wrath of Khan?
Not quite. It's basically like how the ending kind of ended up making very little sense and would have changed how, basically the Star Trek universe was.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Paul and I probably still remain the only people on this podcast who played the filler video game of Star Trek that was set between the first reboot film and Into Darkness. And
I've kind of been tempted when it's been a few quid on Steam, but that's pretty much why I haven't.
Yeah. but there's been another, I want to say more down-to-earth trailer, but it's still kind of all up in the air. Sorry, trying to make bad puns that don't work. The first proper Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice trailer landed last week. They'd managed to show Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor at one point during that trailer, I think I would have liked it a bit more.
It was interesting.
It was interesting seeing Affleck.
I can't believe how big Ben Affleck
looks. Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because it was like Affleck was looking chunkier than anything he's done recently. He was looking chunkier than he did in Gone Girl, and also like chunkier than previous superhero role of Daredevil. And I know
Daredevil isn't meant to be chunky anyway.
I know that Bale was obviously like quite a slim Batman.
Yeah.
And obviously they may have wanted to get away from that, but I'm slightly concerned about what they did to Affleck to make him look like that.
Mm. In the actual comic book, though, it's based on Dark Knight Returns, he was quite big and bulky.
Oh yeah, but that's just the aesthetics of the time.
He reminded me of that, actually. I was getting a vibe from that. And also, my God, what an improvement. He uses a voice-altering thing in his suit and doesn't just talk like this, which I could never take seriously. It's like, as good as those Batman films are, as soon as he went like this, it's like, no, you sound like a shitty Slipknot song.
I'm Batman.
Where is she?
Yeah, it's just, oh, God, no. And it's like, God, he uses some.
And
he
does think how many soothers he got through in a week.
He seems to do the brooding quite well in the trailer as well. He's very dark and brooding.
I have to admit, I
actually think he'll do a good Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. I was impressed by that. It was just, I don't know. There's just something about the rest of it with Superman sort of coming along in his bright red
suit. I liked how Superman is being kind of this whole, oh, he thinks he's so powerful, but, you know, he thinks that he's a god, but he's not. And, you know, that type of thing has kind of crept in ever so slightly before now, with, like, the comics and the games and whatnot. But never to this extent.
No.
And I kind of do like that, because it's actually coming from...
Well, I don't know, because is it Lex Luthor, Man of Steel? The comics that... There was the mini-series of comics that was from Luthor's perspective as they dealt with the early days of Superman, like the first few years or something, and sort of, like, his response to... It reminded me a bit of that, though minus the... his actions were in that, which I'm not going to spoil because
to be
still
fair, in the Dark Knight Returns, though, they did end up fighting, didn't they? Yeah. Like it was on there. They did actually end up fighting like that in his armor.
But obviously, in the universe building they're going to be going for here, Batman's not already he's like, how established is he?
Well, that's what I'm trying to work out.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I don't quite get, because I know it's not meant to be a sequel to the Nolan films. Yeah,
but I think he's established, obviously he's established enough to get, you know, kind of the iron kind of suit, as it were, in order to fight Superman, so...
But that's just common sense. But I mean, I do wonder if at all Kryptonite will feature in this film, because that's one thing that in Edmondson, you see this in the Lex Luthor Man of Steel comics, is Bruce buys Kryptonite or gets given Kryptonite by Luthor. And he sort of, you know, I don't know if he actually has to use it against Supes. Any point.
He has done before because he was given a ring made of Kryptonite by Superman.
I'm sure he's had to use it in other arcs previously, but in that particular arc...
Just in case he became possessed or ran off the rails?
I think something
and
like that.
Well, he would only trust Bruce Wayne to do it because he would be the only one who would have the guts to do what was needed, apparently.
It's kind of a good idea if you've got a character who is an all-powerful alien being.
Yeah, it is.
And... I'll say this from the angle of I do not watch Man of Steel, but I like the, you know, the angle that they're going for, because after all, if an alien turned up and had the powers that Superman has, a lot of people would be a little bit freaked out by it.
Do you know what I want an insurance adjuster to watch Man of Steel and then come clean with how much damage was done to Smallville and Metropolis over the course of that film, how much that would cost in real money if a similar amount of, you know, sort of inhabited territory was so utterly destroyed.
That actually reminds me of watching, I've watched the first few episodes of Daredevil.
Yeah, we have as well now. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm only up to about the third episode.
I think we're up to about six or so.
But
but
the way they keep tying it in with the after effects of what happened to New York in Avengers Assemble,
really nice touch.
It was a really, really was good touch. Yeah,
the whole season's good because I finished it on Saturday.
You've got all the construction companies and, you know, being all corrupt because after all the, you know, all the shit that happened in Avengers, it's like there's going to be a lot of rebuilding contracts.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I thought that was a very nice touch because it just made perfect sense. It's like, yes, you would have all that instead of all the destruction without any consequence that you don't really see that much.
And the thing I liked about Daredevil is it got the darkness, grittiness at the right level. It didn't go too dark. Whereas the Batman Superman trailer looked like it was going a little bit too down the sort of dark alleyway.
To be honest, I think it needs to if it actually wants to take seriously the concept
also,
of Superman versus
due
Batman.
To the ending of Man of Steel, due to the ending of Man of Steel, there was a line crossed, and you can't come back from that line easily. I'm not saying more than that because I try not to spoil it for people who may suddenly feel inclined to watch it prior to the release of this film.
I will at some point, maybe.
Which is a fair point. And it works really well for Batman because he's a dark character, but Superman isn't really that dark a character.
But I would see how an all-powerful alien like him would attract dark characters. So even if he didn't want anything to do with them, you'd still have people who would be a bit offended by his existence.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You're still going to get those around. I just don't know. Maybe it was the Star Wars trailer. It just didn't have that big impact on me that I was expecting it to have.
That
just
and the
felt
fact
me
that
feeling a bit numb.
I think they actually, they actually tried to throw in more, sort of like a different number of like tiny snippets of scene in the Batman versus Superman trailer, whereas Star Wars kept with longer.
Well, to be fair, it was the second Star Wars trailer, and they obviously needed more than just action. They needed to bring back some of the elements that people
fell
in love with.
Oh, God, there's one part of the Star Wars trailer we haven't discussed. That final bit with Han and Chewie.
We're home.
That did,
he has an age
that
well,
did
bless
make me feel a bit kind of,
Well, you like Harrison Ford anyway.
Well, yeah, I got a soft spot for Harrison Ford. I'm going to move us on to another bit of film news that thankfully doesn't
Are you
have. Yeah, I am. I'm going to move us on.
And hang on, I'll just interject there. This is about Chewie.
Oh yeah.
Because I saw a few people responding to that saying, "How come Ace doesn't look any older?"
Oh God.
And well, for you know, putting on Geek Hat, Wookiees live a lot longer than people.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying Wookiees aren't people?
Wookiee rights.
Okay.
But now let's hang on. Kashyyyk in the attic.
Sorry.
I'm going to move us on to another bit of film.
That would be a good. I'd watch that.
I'm moving us on to another bit of film news that thankfully doesn't have a trailer yet, but it's been announced that Transformers 5 will currently be slated for a 2017 release.
Did you say this was good news? Sorry.
No, I didn't. I said it was good news that it didn't have a trailer yet. That was the good news. That was the good news. There was no trailer yet. The bad news is it's still happening.
Yes. The bad news is
the special effects industry regards this as good news. No one else.
And they're still going ahead with an expanded universe as well, because they want to turn it into a Marvel type universe.
But it's just.
But there's not enough.
The only way they can have a cool. The only way they can have a cool universe is if the Lone Gunmen team up with them to fight evil.
What?
Which happened what? Once. I just
furrowed brow.
I think that Transformers is a bit of a weird one because obviously it's generating enough money to actually, you know, get sequels. But I think most people are actually doing out of morbid curiosity and because they've already watched the previous.
I'm sure every time ones. Mark Kermode is invited to a screening, undoubtedly in London. For a Transformers film, and after the first one, he was like, meh. And then obviously since then, when he really began to regret the decisions leading up to those moments.
The reviews literally being banging his head on stuff. I mean, can we please just stop? Can we just save Mark Kermode's brain cells?
I mean, this is the thing. I mean, he's probably going to be talking about this on his podcast this week, like, you know, and or somewhere, and he's just going to be like... No, it's clear that they have it in for him. They have it in for... And he's a busy man. Not only is he reviewing films and talking about them and stuff, he's busy in a band as well, and they're just trying to kill off his brain. What have they got against his music? His music's okay. Dodge Brothers.
Yeah, I want to know how they're going to expand it into different films.
Oh, well, they're going to have to do something with all those dinosaurs they didn't actually use in the fourth film.
Yeah, but...
dinosaurs? I haven't seen that one yet because I value my sanity.
Dinobot things.
Dino.
Well.
There was
Dinobots. I've got the original toys.
You've got the original Grimlock and Snarl.
I've got Slag. Grimlock, Snarl, Slag, and
you got what?
Swoop.
Oh no, I don't think I could get Swoop.
I'm not going to come to your house and nick them then. It's not a complete collection.
Are they in their boxes or not?
No, I actually played with them. I was a normal child. Well, relatively normal.
I still couldn't believe my aunt got rid of a Millennium Falcon once.
Oh,
seriously?
Well, yeah, because my parents and the rest of the extended family aren't geeks, except for, you know, like my brother, and that's... because I became a geek and then he kind of realised there was cool stuff and, you know. And the rest of the family, they're, lovely kids' toys, you know, like original Teenage Mutant Ninja Hero, Teenage Mutant Hero Turtle toys and Star Wars toys. Yeah, all fecking gone. Original bloody Ghostbusters toys, including a trap, gone.
Gone how, like, gone shipped off to somewhere else? Or to charity shop?
Or whatever. You know, no thought as to... You know, that perhaps they should have kept the amazing crap like that in the family.
How long ago was this and where was the charity shop?
This was a long time ago, I'm afraid. This
in
was
a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
So I'll just need a TARDIS and Millennium Falcon to
But I just... The Transformers 5 news is just kind of disappointing. I mean, the fourth film was... It was worse than the third film. And not... quite as bad as the second and nowhere near as good as the first. This, like, the first film for me is the only one so far that's really been enjoyable.
So
and not had too many problems.
The first film was still shit.
It was not as bad as Catwoman. Remember my Catwoman test. Mm. If it's as bad or worse than Catwoman, then truly it is a bad film. But the first Transformers film does pass the Catwoman test.
The first Transformers film, I promise. I would have liked to see more Cybertron. That's what I'd like to see.
That would have been nice. Cybertron, I mean, surely they've got enough budget to do some CG for that.
But he's gone anyway, in Shia LaBeouf. He's gone, thankfully.
He had a rant last week at some red carpet event about his time on Transformers and a few other, you know, bits of Hollywood. At the same time, though, he has been doing some interesting projects.
Have you seen that music? That Fury.
But have you seen that music video of him in was it Sears? Yeah. What's the name of the song?
Yeah, that just creeped me out.
It's not creepy. Is it Chandelier? I don't know. It's not creepy. It's a really cool bit of interpretive sort of dramatic, narratively based dance. It's great, the story that tells.
I think we kind of appreciate it more because we not saying anything against, you know, anybody else, but we went to kind of uni.
Anyone knows that you're better than.
No.
I was going to say we went to uni and had to deal with all that academic, you know, kind of bull crap with the arts and whatnot. So,
and interpreting in metaphor.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, we.
So, how would you see them expanding the universe, though?
What, for Transformers?
I can only think of two things.
Okay,
a massive explosion.
I can't imagine them being bothered to do anything that is off planet, off Earth. I think it's still going to be Earth side. What I do wonder is if they've decided that the fourth film was so lucrative for them in the Chinese market that they continue to pursue that side of things and get one sort of team kind of in Southeast Asia, and then obviously regular stuff still happening North America.
I was going to suggest that they could just make it entirely in Chinese and never release it in English. And then I thought to myself, I'd still watch it because the special effects
I'm
disappointed with myself.
I still think it was very telling that it was Hong Kong that got absolutely trashed in the fourth film. It was like they were trying to say something, considering that, I don't know if it was last year or this year, they got elections and stuff coming up, and there's been a lot of tension there, and it was almost like, because the mainland Chinese authorities kind of dictating stuff to happen on Hong Kong Island, and I just wondered if there was some weird subtext that was kind of pro regime kind of worked into the fourth film, going, Hong Kong, you watch yourselves or else we're gonna send giant robots to trash your fucking home.
I think you were speaking so loud you were clipping then.
The mainland wasn't dictating things. They were merely pointing out that Hong Kong was practicing the wrong kind of democracy.
It's a good thing we're not trying to sell this podcast in China, because we've got no hope in hell.
Because the Chinese
Are you saying that we're trying to sell this podcast?
Well, not for money, but maybe for
For what?
I was going to say
for Transformers figures? For Millennium Falcons?
Millennium Falcons.
Going back on topic,
yeah,
I think the only way that they could interest me some more is if they did the Headmasters and Target Masters story.
For those of us who don't know what that is, because Transformers were not a part of their childhood, except when they occasionally went over to cousins.
So it's their subsets of Transformers from who actually, when Cybertron was destroyed, they found another planet to inhabit rather than Earth, and they combined with the organic life forms on there, and they turned into their weapons or heads as the robots.
Yes, hence Headmasters or Target Masters.
Or Target Masters.
The head and the weapons were little Transformers themselves.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they became their pilots. So the Headmasters, when they transformed into jets or whatever, they transformed into little pilots and go into the cockpit to control them.
Which in a way, to be nerdy Nebulous. Again.
There you go. It was in the war was on Nebulous.
That's actually closer to the original toys from Japan, which became the Transformers because they had little pilots.
Yeah,
they were robot suits in the sort of Sentai. live-action TV thing, you know, like Power Rangers, where, you know, the Power Rangers would be the, you know, the pilots, but that's what the several of the original toys were. And that's why the original toys, like Optimus Prime, the trailer had a little gun turret, and that was for the pilot to sit in.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which, of course, made no sense when it was brought over to the West.
But okay. It was good fun. Yeah. I had a load of Headmaster toys. They were cool.
I think it's one of those things that, well, I mean, I only watched a couple of the cartoons, you know, when, because my dad obviously had, you know, kind of a couple of videotapes, not very many, just, you know, a couple of episodes on them. And I think the movie, as in the Transformers, the movie, so I really didn't get much, or I don't really remember much about the original Transformers series, and I haven't really been inclined to go back and, you know.
I am not inclined whatsoever. All I remember from my childhood having it on in my vicinity was an overwhelming sense of boredom. So,
well, I think in that case, you two should to compare the movies to what they used to be.
No.
You should watch the 80s movie.
No.
Don't you think, Retroid?
No.
Yes. I actually think, well, first of all, you've got the Arrival on Cybertron, which was a film which was edited together from the, I think, the first two, maybe three episodes of the TV series.
Yep.
Yeah. And that is a better origin story.
I would rather watch Ulysses 31 again, I'm afraid.
Ulysses 31 is classic. What do you mean by that?
I'm saying that I don't want to go anywhere near the Transformers cartoons.
What?
The Transformers cartoon, you could safely leave. But I would say Arrival on Cybertron
and the movie
would...
The movie had quite a good soundtrack. Quite like 80s.
Oh, yeah. Live.
Heavy metal. The soundtrack for Transformers the movie is why I played a few hours of Shadow Warrior, the redo, you know, as in the remake, because the game starts off with "You've got the touch."
Oh, Stan Bush.
Mm-hmm. You've got the touch.
You got the power.
Sorry.
Okay. 12.
One shall stand and one shall fall.
So not impressed.
What? That's because you haven't watched the movie.
No.
That's another thing. You know,
watch the movie, well done. That's another thing. Absolutely. Watch the movie.
No.
what I was going to say
the movie
is that...
do a review for for Hex Dimension. That's what
I was going to say.
They are by default better than any of the live action films.
I don't care.
What I was going to say is that...
I can ship it to you. I've got it on DVD.
No! Oh, okay.
So have I.
No! No! No!
Give in to it. You might actually enjoy it. Crikey. It's not even 90 minutes. Don't worry about it.
Leonard Nimoy.
Was the voice of Galvatron and Unicron, was it?
Yeah, and it's...
No, Unicron was... oh, damn it. I forget his name now.
I know.
Rosebud and War of the Worlds American adaptation.
Yes.
Look, there are many things from the 80s that to watch.
Thank you, yes.
But most of the cartoons from
it
that period
Orson
are not
Welles
of
it. It had Orson Welles in it as a giant planet-killing robot. What more
it
do you
want? Awesome.
Nah.
I think, listeners, if you wish... Emily,
let's
should tweet us or leave us a message on Facebook or leave a message on our website or email.
No.
On all of the links that Emily will give you at the end of the show.
No.
With the hashtag, Watch Transformers 80s Rocks.
Yes.
No.
There you go. Yes.
No.
Mickey Grimlock.
So bored as a kid. So fucking bored and tortured in my mind.
To be fair, though... You know, when you watch something as a kid, obviously you don't get as much from it as when you're an adult.
There's only one cartoon that I like more as an adult than I did as a kid, and that's Batman the Animated Series. Meanwhile, X-Men cartoon, worse now than when I watched it as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. I have to admit that.
To be fair, X-Men cartoon was like a natural... progression in terms of animation technique and storytelling technique than what was kind of given with the Transformers cartoons that came before them.
The Transformers cartoons were more minimalist, but they were also far less shit. Yeah. I thought the animation and a lot of the art style in the X-Men cartoon series was awful. As was a lot of American animation.
Both came across to me as things that wanted to sell the toys. Lots of toys. All the toys. So many toys.
But you can't really comment unless you've watched it. So you can't really knock it on TV.
I have watched it. Not as a kid. Not the movie. I don't care.
You haven't watched the bloody movie. You can't.
I don't
want to
watch the movie.
Anyway, moving on. What have we got to move on to?
I want to talk about Jensen Ackles playing guitar on his leg. Like, using his leg as a guitar. Just for a moment, just to wash my mind. I was
I'm going to have to wash my mic now.
Rewatching season 4 of Supernatural, and there is an episode, I think it's either the, like, it's after episode 3, probably episode 5 or 6, Jensen Ackles' character, Dean Winchester, in outtakes that they actually have as part of the credits for that episode, starts mouthing, you know, sort of miming along to Eye of the Tiger in the front of the Impala. And it's brilliant. He's just doing the funniest expressions of that. And he eventually ends up sat on the roof of the Impala, lifting up one of his legs, and, well, it would be his right leg, so he's strumming his right leg and doing the fretboard work as you would an actual guitar in order to play along to Eye of the Tiger whilst he continues to mime the song.
So Angan strumming his what?
Leg.
Oh, right.
It's leg. Definitely leg. His leg. Definitely his leg.
His third leg.
No! No! Oh, damn you.
A lot of this music from Transformers, the movie, sounds like Eye of the Tiger.
I don't care! No! Just no! No means you've no!
No touching and no powers.
It's also not a Weird Al Yankovic song on the... Yeah. on the soundtrack. Because it's got Weird Al.
And it's got Instruments of Destruction. That was a good
There are many things from the 80s that I'm happy to go near, but no.
Why?
No. No.
I'm not going to force it on you, so don't look at me.
if a copy of that film ends up in this house, you are burning it for me. Out in the back garden.
Onto a CD. All right.
No. You're setting it on fire in the back garden.
Oh, right, that kind of burning.
Yes.
Let me just see if it's on Netflix for
No.
It's not. I've checked.
Oh.
You do realise that we're going to get tweeted at now saying something like hashtag Emily watch Transformers?
No, the hashtag is Transformers 80s Rocks. There you go.
You got the touch.
You got the power.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Has anyone got any actual news to continue with, or shall we move on to what we have been up to that is nothing to do with Daredevil?
Okay.
Or Transformers.
No, oh, you bugger. Damn it.
Sorry.
Oh, well, what's that? Bill Pullman and Judd Hirsch are back for Independence Day 2. Sorry, I'm looking at headlines. Oh, God. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
But
and Brent Spiner.
And Jeff Goldblum?
I'm not sure whether it's been confirmed.
No, he's busy doing Transformers.
What, is in Transformers?
No, he's just trying to torture me.
Oh, right, okay. You had me going there.
Oh, God. Yeah. There was one thing that's happened, because obviously since we last had Retroid on the show, Puppygate has evolved and mutated.
Wait, Puppygate?
Further, the whole thing with the Hugo Awards.
Oh, right.
And the fact that George R. R. Martin obviously did a whole series of blog posts about it, and basically it's like, at the end of the blog post, like, mood, depressed, as he looked at both sides, and kind of, even, he was pretty even-handed and fair, but pretty much came away... The whole feeling of the engineering going on was just ridiculous and unwarranted. And there are two of the nominees who've been put forward by the... I don't think it's necessarily sad puppy. There's another... There was an extension on the Puppygate. There was like another layer, which was like actual particular right-wing bloggers. Like, not entertainment people at all, but actual right-wing blogs and that who actually manipulated votes as well. I say manipulated. Mass nominations.
What says an awards ceremony more than politically motivated, don't give a shit about any of the rest of it, rigged voting, or rigged nominations rather.
Yeah.
It's just, for fuck's sake.
So basically two writers who don't agree with some of the people that have been involved in nominating their work have pulled their work out of the nominations in the past week. One female author and one, which was for a short story, and then one male author for a novel. And they were just like, they didn't like the way they'd been used by the is it Sad Puppy? Because there's Puppygate in that. Well, there's Sad Puppy.
Sad Puppies, I think, yeah.
Sad Puppy, okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Who knows the most about this?
I think Retro's been following it a bit more closely than I have. She says.
Yeah.
Well, I've read the George R. Martin posts where he goes into detail about how small the fandom was and how it was. All these award ceremonies were pretty much created by all these conventions because no one else was doing it. No one else was covering it. No one else was giving awards. No one else was giving a shit about any of these genres. So, yeah, he's very upset about it. And so far as he's concerned, they're standing a good chance of killing the worth.
Mm.
So, and he's like, yeah, you've got a point there. Because what's the point? The entire idea of these award ceremonies is that they're supposed to be voted for by the community, both as nominations and, the end result. And if the nominations get rigged, then what's the bloody point?
Mm.
Yeah, and so that I don't think we need to cover it much more, but it's just because this is obviously also tied into WonderCon, which is a pretty huge convention as well.
Yeah,
it's just kind of disappointing that people have gotten to the stage where they feel compelled to do this, but it is partially also an offshoot of feelings from Gamergate as well. Yeah. Gamergate's been kind of boiling over less viciously than it has been. It's been simmering in comparison to boiling these last few weeks. Well, this has been kind of kicking off.
This has been sort of an offshoot because it's the same, and I'm sorry, Gamergate, but this is fucking true. It's the same kind of anti-progress, right-wing, sport little brattery that birthed that.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of shit that was around well before Baldwin decided to call it Gamergate, and everyone seized on that because even though there are no leaders, they do so love someone who's in the public eye and has a big profile giving them something to call themselves or something to do. So that's weird for a leaderless movement, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's the same kind of thing. So it's not so much Gamergate who are responsible, but yeah, it's the same kind of people who are around, and it's the same kind of, oh, there's progress happening in the free market, best rig that.
I try to stay out as much as possible from this entire thing, but
there because seems otherwise to be, despair.
Yeah. But there seems to be, like, what Gamergaters kind of call as SJWers.
Yeah.
Social Justice Warriors. Is there kind of an alternate term which is applied to them, or is it just Gamergaters?
Twats. Assholes, sport little boys, also sport little girls.
I think I've heard of the term, like, was it red pillars, or?
I think I really want to move us on from this topic of conversation.
Are you aware of, let's see if I can remember, Calgary. Did you hear about that?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic. And it ties in not only with Gamergate, it ties in with Red Pillars, who are men's rights activists, because after all, us men, seeing as there are so few, male world leaders or, male rich billionaires or millionaires or, people, men in position of power, because we're so downtrodden by feminists. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm just gonna move this on to a brief. Apparently there's news or leaks about Mass Effect 4 kind of going around at the moment. Somebody linked it. Well, Chris, who does the a little bit for Hex, linked me to it earlier.
I've heard that.
And yeah. I have not looked at Mass Effect 4. If it, you know, comes out at any sensible time on a system I can actually play it on, maybe I will play it. But as I was trying to explain to Paul earlier, the Mass Effect series is a series that I'm not fond of actually at the moment. I've had further time to reflect and distance myself from it, and after what happened with 3, it's not one of my favorite game series at the moment.
Oh, I think they definitely screwed up the ending in a lot of ways.
I did like a little sort of list of like games that I've like really liked over the past 10 years on my Drowning Multimedia blog last week. Mass Effect, and I'll make it on the list because I can't bring myself to go near it and play it since completing 3. I mean, I had a brief go on the Mass Effect 3 port for the Wii U, but yeah. I've barely touched it because it's just so... Grr.
To be fair, I did quite like the port. It's just obviously lacking in all of the, you know, features.
DLC. The stuff that and also the stuff I loved from the previous two games in terms of character development and different approaches to situations.
Still had that kind of motion comic thing that, you know, kind of it's like that's all well and good, but in the end, how much difference does it actually make?
Issue is having the limited choices for dealing with situations, because at least previously it was like, oh, you can be gung-ho and save the universe, or you can be diplomatic and save the universe, well, the galaxy, whereas the third game just didn't really give you that choice anymore, and that is what really pissed me off about it. So yeah, Mass Effect 4, I can't care enough about it at the moment, because I'm still bitter.
Fair enough. I understand that bitterness as a fan of the series. I'm still a fan of the series, but there's stuff about how they approach the, you know, the choices and the storyline in 3 that I seriously want to slap them for.
Can we discuss what people have been up to other than watching Daredevil?
I was just going to say about the, you know, kind of finish off the Calgary thing. It's very quick.
Okay.
Right. The whole thing with the Gamergaters who have been going on saying that they're not right-wing and they're not men's rights activists. A group of men's rights activists got hold of a stand at the Calgary Expo last week and decided to put lots of Gamergate memorabilia up, including collectible prints of Vivian, the fictional girlfriend of Gamergaters. They also started going to discussion panels and disrupting them if they were being too feminist.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. And then they got kicked out. And currently the toys are being thrown out of the whiny piss baby prams because they're saying it's censorship, and they threw women out, apart from it wasn't all women. Because it was the, if anyone's heard the term, the honey badgers.
Hmm. Yep.
I've heard.
I killed some honey badgers on Far Cry 4 at the weekend, but
please get some more, because they are female men's rights activists.
I think we need to get off this topic of discussion.
Got kicked out, and they're being whiny piss babes.
I want to talk about playing Far Cry 4 at the weekend. I played it some more. I am still kind of a bit with Pagan Min on the whole situation that, you know, he sort of, you know, slaughtered the royal family and all that kind of, but he just seems like the right kind of guy for the job. He dresses so sharply. Meanwhile, I hear him talk to me on the radio occasionally whilst I'm slaughtering the local wildlife, like honey badgers, which I needed, what was it, 3 of them so that I could get a 4th slot for on my weapons holsters. So that I could carry, you know, more weapons.
Which I still find really weird. It's like, what, only honey badgers have the right kind of fur for that?
Yeah, you can only tan it just right. I wish there was an added degree of realism, though, to Far Cry 4, you know, this time round, in regards to skinning and tanning leather, and that there should be a 50-50 chance that you might get anthrax doing all of this out in the open. Because for those of you who don't know, tanning animal hide by hand is a great way to get yourself ill with anthrax if you don't do it right.
Be just, a kind saying. Of sort of throwback to the malaria in Far Cry 2.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be good. I mean, I think they're a little too high up in Karat, in the fictional area of Karat for, like, say, mosquitoes. But I got poisoned by a snake, actually, whilst I was walking around. It was in a building of all things rather than some trees. And it sort of, like, I had to, like, heal myself and stop myself from losing all my health whilst the poison whipped its way through me. But then, like, it was a green snake. Well, the only green snakes I know other than tree snakes, which this obviously wasn't meant to be per se, which was, and those are kind of more low venom, is, like, this was a green mambo. And it's like, well, if it was a fecking green mambo that's just bit me, I should die. Don't let me be able to heal myself. I should just die because mambos are one of the most lethal family of snakes when it comes to bites.
Do you know which number mamba it was?
It wasn't number 5.
Oh, just checking.
But no, it's just, it is feeling a bit like 3, for obvious, 3 is the only comparison I can really make because I've only ever seen bits of 2. It is feeling like 3, but the narrative is feeling more competently done. And less what the fur, as you kind of got, you know, in the third game. So what the hell is that piece of fan art? Somebody's done a take on the iconic image of X-Men Days of Future Past, and they've done it to do with Amiibo, so you've got, like, Luigi with his arm braced against Peach, as there's a picture of loads of Amiibos behind them, like wanted posters with the words sold out plastered all over them, or unavailable. That's so cool. Who did that? What does it say?
It wasn't me.
Michael Ivey.
We'll have to link to that. That looks awesome. Yeah.
Cool.
So, what have I been doing this week? Like, my week seems to just kind of disappear.
And can I just interject for a moment? I just need to nip downstairs for the bathroom for it. Okay. I mean,
Well, we'll talk about. You've done something, surely, Paul.
What have I done? You've
lost days. You've lost hours.
Been playing on the Wii U. You must have been playing some Nintendo game.
No, I mean, I quickly stuck on Just Dance the one day.
Philistine.
But well, I mean, that
you've
was
been stuck on what?
Just Dance the one day, just because I felt like I needed some exercise, and I.
I thought you said Just Dance. I just didn't. Compute, sorry.
No, that's all right.
What?
Is that any
good?
Well, the one that I stuck on was it Just Dance 4 for the Wii U? It's in... well, obviously, it's, you know, kind of pop track, so the tracks are fairly hit and miss.
Has it got MC Hammer, You Can't Touch This?
I think one of the earlier ones
Yeah, one of the earlier ones does. And it's a really hard track to do, actually. It's like out of their 5-star rating that they had for the earlier games, that was either a 4 or 5-star game.
But you know what's really, really weird about the Just Dance games?
What?
Go on.
Is that, you know, you kind of start off and I was doing it by myself, so, you know, it's like, you know, waving the Wiimote around in, you know, motions and whatnot, and, you know, I'm thinking, like, this feels really, really silly.
Right.
Before I knew it, I was, like, really going for it. How does that happen? How do you go from, I feel like a complete daft clunker?
I played one song, because you were playing that just pimping.
Yeah, just as you walked through the door, and I was like...
I spotted you.
That's where the videos come from.
I think I would have been less embarrassed if I was being caught masturbating, to be honest.
I thought it was perfectly fine. I thought it was a bit weird. Because, you know, you never sort of take into Just Dance off your own volition before.
So you'd rather watch Paul masturbating than Just Dance than watch Transformers the movie?
This is not Nerds After Dark.
I think I would have been more comfortable dragging out a dead body from there's just something weird about, you know, kind of you walking in and me playing Just Dance and go,
Honey, I'm home. What the hell are you doing, doll?
Yeah, but then I decided to sort of take the Wiimote off you and do a dance of, thingy America. What's it called again? They used it for the in-betweeners thing a lot. Thingy Americana that's got like the... That's not quite it, but no, can't, yeah. It sounds fake Italian, and it's actually quite a fun one to dance to. It's actually one of the easier tracks on that particular iteration of the game. There's there's like,
I did that for like one song or so. I think it was just one song. But, you know, that...
There's like, they've got like like one of the last songs that, like, was it, is it Thingy Furtado?
Nelly Furtado.
Nelly Furtado did. When she sort of last had a go at being popular, was it Maneater?
Maneater,
And that's like, that's actually quite, it's a hard song, but it is.
An easy dance.
It's got a high difficulty rating, but.
Right.
It's, I think, due to the subtlety. It's not as complicated as it thinks it is. I usually tend to be able to get a high score on it.
I mean, to be fair, I think the song that I did was Rock Lobster.
Yes, by B-52s. That is a tricky track to do.
Yeah.
And also excellent. Rock Lobster!
Speaking of music rhythm games, you know, there was one bit of news we didn't discuss. The Guitar Hero...
Live.
That looks actually quite interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting new direction, especially as it's kind of, you know, well, not necessarily a reboot per se, but it's, you know,
it's certainly trying something a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah,
I like the whole live.
Yeah, the one with the live ones. But then again, I was a bit it didn't show you properly still any intended gameplay, whereas at least with that Rock Band 4 trailer we had like a month back, they were clear as to the kind of feel that we were going to be getting, and also the amount of music.
To be fair, I mean, I'm not entirely sure whether it's necessarily that it didn't have any gameplay, because obviously it did have like the guitar thing, and you know, so that obviously did some sort of graphics with it. And I can imagine, because obviously you're going to be doing it from first person's perspective, so I can kind of imagine them doing like, you know, basically 2D video footage of, you know, the crowd type thing.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by the MTV kind of channel as well that you can just jump in and jam to.
That's quite interesting. I certainly think that, you know, obviously this is, this has come about because of Rock Band 4.
It does feel like, it does feel like they had their arm twisted a bit, sort of had their hand forced in order to announce this. And it was like, at the end, Rock Band was the classier game, like Guitar Hero Warriors of Rock. It was the last decent attempt published by Activision for a Guitar Hero game after having a whole load of really crappy band-led sort of tiny iterations like the Aerosmith one, the Metallica one and stuff. And it was like the last proper one with the full kit as well.
It does make me think, though, because when we went the last time we went on holiday, that was one of the games that we saw constantly in different arcades.
Yeah, it was an arcade version of Guitar Hero 3, and I played to death over several different arcades. Yes.
And I think arcades are one of those things where, you know, I think gaming could happen there.
Yeah.
But it just needs some work, because there's very few actual, you know, varieties of arcade machines, it seems, you know, in a lot of locations.
But I think that's partly due to the UK market, because whereas at least certainly before home consoles obviously became such a thing that you had people who wanted to game, whereas over here now people got means to play games at home, and our arcades have been mostly, rather than being something in like a regular town or something, they've become a part of seaside towns.
Yeah,
they've become the seaside culture.
I do think that arcade machines, they're good for arcade games and whatnot, but I think they have to be specifically designed more than anything else, because, you know, especially watching like Emily with the Guitar Hero, you know, game, and it's like, you know, you're stuck in your, you know, pound or whatever it was, and you got one song to choose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can go to hell. It utterly misses the point.
At the same time, don't forget, there was that one racing game we went on, and even if you did well, like, you came first, you had to put more money in order to progress to the next lap. And it was like, what the fuck was the point in coming... Well, the next level, rather. Yeah, what was the point in coming first?
Yeah.
Because there was no point in coming first if you had to put money in order to go to the next track.
Yeah.
That's just, yeah.
I will just say that I had heard that the new Guitar Hero isn't going to be using the old.
Yeah, not the old peripherals. It's got to have a new one with it.
Well, to be honest, it's the next generation now anyway, so it's new hardware. So it
makes
sense. Expected. Unless they're actually planning on doing
compatible.
It. Is it?
Yeah.
With the instruments, yeah.
And I was going to ask, what have other people been up to other than watching Daredevil?
Neverwinter, I have been slaying orcs, dragons, and trolls. Yeah.
In a game.
Have you had much
no,
loot?
No, in real life.
Yeah.
Has there been much loot?
Never been up. Yeah, there has been quite a bit of loot, actually, yeah.
And have there been other medieval instruments? I'm sorry, I've had a cider.
I just thought of something that they did watch.
What?
We picked up Lucy, didn't we?
Oh yeah, we did watch Lucy.
Who's Lucy?
The Scarlett
Why
Johansson...
Why are you picking up Lucy?
The Scarlett Johansson
did she
film
mind?
From last year. She didn't seem to mind that much.
She insisted.
Oh,
oh, I see.
Lucy.
It's
yeah.
Nerds After Dark already.
We've already been there.
Was it
there. Luke, I got told off.
Luke Besson?
Yeah.
The directing and writing, yeah, it was... It was interesting, except from dealing with the premise of, we only use 10% of our brains.
And I looked on some of the, featurettes and whatnot, and, there was, interviews with some scientists that turn around and say, we do actually only use 10% of brains. And then they kind of went on to admit, well, actually, the scientific consensus is a bit, and it's like... To me, it does not compute that you only use 10% of your brain, because obviously you're using, your entire brain just at different times. So sometimes
it's entire bollocks. It's like saying you've got a car, you're only using so much of it at once because you're revving the engine at full speed, but you're also not using the brakes. And you're not firing the airbags. And, you're only using a certain percentage of your car, so you're not getting the full benefit out of it killing yourself in it.
In terms of the comparison with, say, for example, computers, in terms of using the entirety of your brain would mean that all of your neurons are firing. Now, if you imagine a computer with all of the, transistors going, off and on.
It overheat like a motherfucker.
It's not just that, but it also wouldn't make sense. Mm. The whole point of a computer is that, transistors and whatnot turn off and on, according to,
And it manages its resources appropriately.
Yeah, it's if you kind of flood a system so that's, got too much electrical information and whatnot, then, it doesn't work as a computer.
Yeah, because if you've got someone who says, we only use 10% of our brains, they're talking shite and you shouldn't listen to them.
But stylistic...
You're a bumblebee, you shouldn't be able to fly because of aerodynamics. It's like, you're talking shite.
But stylistically and acting, the rest of the film is fine. It's just this one little premise that they built the entire film around, which is kind of like,
Yeah, I would... if it would have been like just a, one little thing, and that was never mentioned again in the entire film. That'd have been quite.
But it kept cropping up.
It kept on cropping up, and it's like, no.
She's using 11% of her brain.
Well, to be honest, it kind of.
There was a percentage counter.
Yeah, there was a counter, and it got kind of very, very unrealistic in the sense that, right, so you've got the human brain, and theoretically, if you're only using, if you're only using 10% of your brain, fair enough. And then you went to 20 and 30 when you can start manipulating reality, and it's like, how does that compute? What is the connection between?
I want to ask the gents if there anything else they've been up to that isn't Lucy, Neverwinter, or Daredevil, because we still have to talk about that thing that Retro wanted to talk about.
Yeah, just go straight into that.
No, I have been playing Elite.
Oh.
I know that's a big
shock.
Hang
on, I haven't spoken about Neverwinter before. This is a bit...
No, you did actually.
I think last episode. Was that?
No, that was Destiny.
No, you have mentioned Neverwinter.
Oh, yes, it was. But you mentioned Destiny more.
Yeah.
But the important thing is, after my trauma,
yeah,
I'm now back flying around in a python.
Yay!
I managed to grind my way through profit and trade routes and a little bit of exploration, but mostly just selling shit. And I am now back in my python, and I've made sure I've got enough money for the insurance this time.
Insurance good. Is good.
Insurance is very good. You don't Definitely. Appreciate insurance until you find yourself losing a more than 60 million credit ship.
It comes to something in like a video game where you actually have to buy insurance.
Well, it makes sense within the game universe, and I like it now. No, I didn't. And I still want to complain because when I first signed up for the Elite beta, you had a little, you could have like a either a Christmas tree or possibly like a, you know, little nodding doll on your dashboard, but definitely a little Christmas tree, you know, like a little nodding toy. And they removed that and it's never been there since.
Aww.
So David Braben is a bastard. He took away.
Wait, are we trying to align Mr. Braben with certain other kickstarted individuals? Because I think that's a bit mean.
No, I wouldn't. Okay. Because when he's promised stuff, it's turned up,
which is always good. I'm looking forward to that.
And also, I've watched. You know, because I didn't kickstart it in the first place, and I've gone back and watched some of the early videos and listening to him talk about, you know, very nerdy things. It's just, you're one of us. I like you.
Okay, so, Retroid, we held back on this last episode. But
so I heard, yes.
We tried, but there's been recent controversy surrounding the preservation of video games.
Yeah, it'll never catch on that, will it? It's like, oh, God, lawyers are just the worst.
Can you give the lay of the land to our listeners?
The lay of the land is that, is it the electronics, as in games industry? Yeah, video game publishers. Preserving abandoned games, even for museums and archives, because it will involve hacking, and hacking a game is illegal. And they can fuck off. There we go. That's it. Finished. The end. It's so myopic. It's just mind-numbing how stupid and short-sighted this entire approach is. It's entirely based on, any circumvention of anything whatsoever to do with our product is going to be piracy. And it's like, no. Let's see how early film and early TV and early radio would have got on if no one was allowed to keep their own copy.
There would be certain things lost, certainly. I mean, we've already lost stuff because people didn't get the chance to copy things.
Yeah, classic Doctor
Who. Yeah, classic Doctor Who. There are things like Hancock's Half Hour on, you know, on the radio, where they've just completely lost episodes because they simply either didn't keep the tape, they gave it away, they sold it, they erased it for something else.
I just want to ask, we've still got all of our episodes, haven't we?
Yeah.
Okay, cool, cool.
Yeah, Future Civilization.
Can I that one?
You know, after the fall...
You'll still have nerds.
The nerds will survive. Because we'll know how to build shelters and make batteries and shit like that.
But no, the whole preservation of electronic media like that, it just borders on ridiculousness, because the whole idea of piracy is obviously circumventing stuff to stop having to pay for something, or to then make off money from somebody else's thing if you're then going to go and bootleg it and sell it as your own. But if you're preserving what is essentially a cultural text, a cornerstone of a culture's existence, an expression of itself in a particular place and time, like novels are, films are, television programs, radio programs, pieces of music, it does seem a bit ridiculous that you would then, just because of the technical fact that the one area of copyright law that is related to software and recent changes to it as well, is kind of like, oh, you can't mess around with the code because that's breaking copyright, because we're so short-sighted we can't realise that people might want to look at these things as cultural texts.
I mean, The stupid thing is, though, is that these, you know, these companies are complaining that, you know, in order to preserve it, you'd need to pirate it. It wouldn't be piracy if the copyright holder actually gave you permission to do that. So why not?
Oh, yeah, because lawyers. Because they'd have to get lawyers involved. And oh, but then the lawyers are still making money when they go and fucking prosecute you anyway, because, oh, you've circumvented a thing for the sake of your museum, or you've circumvented a thing for the sake of teaching an academic course, maybe, or a practical course.
I mean, I remember when some of the Doctor Who episodes were, you know, were being recovered.
Yes.
When the BBC was first doing its, you know, its drive to get things back. At times, they were still prosecuting the people involved for, you know, copyright infringement.
Which is just...
But they were trying to get hold of material that they'd lost themselves.
Yeah, we don't have this. Does anyone have it? Yes, I managed to record it on this primitive system that, you know, only a handful of people had. Here it is. Thanks very much. You broke copyright law. We will sue you for it. The fuck? It's just, I've given you something that you lost. It's like, I've just picked up this fiver. Ah, the fact that you have the fiver proved that you pickpocketed it. Oh, fuck off. You threw it away in the first place. You didn't care. Now you're getting it back and you're going to make money from it. And it's all, no, it's copyright.
And,
it's
and through these actions, they are damaging a still new area of our cultural history. I mean, technically, we're, I mean, video games have been going since, in some way or form, since the 60s, seriously. Oh, so, yeah,
And I would say home video gaming has been going since the late 70s.
Yeah, so that's...
In various ways.
Yeah, so that's about, well, certainly a minimum of like 40 years worth of content. So if we look at how film developed...
Oh yeah, film was like 18... Like late 1800s, I believe.
Yeah, so film.
Speaking as a film student.
So in terms of lining up the chronology of the development of video games and cinematic entertainment, where are we? Are we at talkies yet in video games?
I think we're at talkies. I would personally put us where maybe in the 30s.
To be honest,
it's... The 1930s for film, you know, where it's starting to get big.
It's
becoming
a
thing, but they don't necessarily care.
It's a bad way of looking at it, because obviously the development of film has taken a lot longer to do. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, digital video editing systems obviously came in, like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s and whatnot, whereas before then they had to do it with, like, tape and all sorts of different, you know, processes and whatnot in order to get the film. And computers, they've always been on the same medium of, kind of, you know, on a computer, digital. I don't think you can necessarily compare them in terms of where we are in relation to kind of film terms. I think it's more the fact that video games have had a far more compressed evolution than film has.
It's very compressed. And even though, yes, they are all digital, there's so many different, even, you know, media, ways the media are used, all of that kind of thing. You're looking at, there are cartridges to start off with, there are tapes, there are punch cards, and then you've got the different computer formats that were using those, and they all used, well, most of them used discs and tapes in entirely different ways. It's like, yes, it was all in the zeros and ones, but they had different ways of formatting discs, they had different ways of, you know, saving out, you know, headers for software and, you know, the data on the tapes. So, you know, there's all of that. Just a good example of how hard it can be and how varied it is the recent Grim Fandango remaster. Did anyone read the behind, you know, the story of getting that going?
No.
Well, it was a nightmare, wasn't it?
It was a nightmare because, bearing in mind, this is Lucas Games.
Oh, yeah, and of course, with Disney picking up everything now, it's making things really awkward. Oh, yeah, because Monkey Island remasters have gone from the iOS store this past week or so.
Have they?
Yeah, they've taken them off.
Because things are switching around.
I don't know, but you can't get them on iOS now. So, continue.
I've got the first
continue.
Two on. In my account anyway, and I've got them on PC, so...
But, yeah, so, Grim Fandango.
Yeah. Now, they had a lot of the original... they had, you know, the, like, a disc copy, but they wanted the source code, and they wanted the original assets, so they could, you know, get... You know, basically tear it apart and put it back together again and make it better with enhancements.
basically now, do a proper job of it, unlike what Konami did with the Silent Hill HD remakes.
Yes, well, where to be honest, that'll do. Yeah.
It's happened quite a few times where it's been like, oh yes, it's a HD remaster, and it's like, what have you actually done?
Well, the problem with the Konami Silent Hill remasters is very specific. They didn't actually have the proper source files that they originally created the game from in order to put together the game. So
They very much had a that'll do
approach
to the whole collection.
But now, Grim Fandango.
Grim Fandango. The original source code and art assets were on... I think they were on DAT.
Yeah.
And no one had a drive.
Ooh.
So they
basically had the software, they didn't have the hardware.
Yeah, they had no way to read it. So as it turned out, I think it was DAT, or it could have been one of the early, portable hard drive things, like ZIP, or it was something very proprietary and no one uses anymore. But as it turned out, a friend of a friend had pretty much walked past a skip years ago and seen that someone had thrown these drives out and thought that could come in handy one day and put it in his garage.
Cool.
So they had to hunt this bloke down.
With guns.
He'd never used the drives, so they didn't even know if it would work. And then hook it up to a computer of that vintage because it used, I think it was the original SCSI or something like that. But something that, again, no computer uses now.
Mm.
And as it turned out, they managed to get them working. They managed to get the data off. But that's a bloody good example. That's a big studio.
Yeah.
That was Lucas Games at the time, and they had all the source material, but it was absolute sheer hell to get the data off.
But it's pretty much useless, to be fair.
It does actually remind me that it's only these past couple of years that Nintendo has stopped actually offering a repair service for like NES, NESs, because they physically can't actually get the parts for it anymore.
Well, technically, they could manufacture them, but...
Well, you know what? It does make me wonder if 3D printing manages to get more accessible, at least in the terms of machine printing, so printing circuits and stuff, then there would be opportunities to perhaps manufacture technically, legally, because copyright and that, old systems, so that you can then access old hardware slash software, depending on whether it's a cartridge or whatever. But
related to that. Just as an aside, I'm in one of the Spectrum groups where they've been discussing the Sinclair Vega and that Elite Bluetooth keyboard, which is apparently still trundling along, and it looks like it could actually make it out the door. But most of the people who are watching the Bluetooth keyboard are they just kind of sell spares? Because they are using the same kind of membrane keyboard in that Bluetooth keyboard, and there are people who are, using original 80s Spectrums, and that used the rubber, which is either breaking or just breaking down naturally, because that's what rubber does.
Mm.
So they're looking at those and thinking, well, I can either buy one and use it as spares, just take it, rip it apart, never use it as a Bluetooth keyboard. I'll just have the membrane and the rubber and the case and everything like that, and because it'll be brand new. Or are Elite actually going to be able to, just sell spares, and you can buy them in job lots, and it's that kind of thing where, as you say, 3D printing, there are people who are wanting to preserve physical things and parts and little bits from like drive covers and stuff.
But we're just talking about the physical side of things, and obviously with the traditional storage mediums that have been so superseded by this point, it is hard to read them and that. But then the problem that we're now going to be coming up as the lifespans of the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 slowly compress and become less than the systems before them because they didn't have the online connectivity. The online connectivity of the Xbox 360 and the PS3 is without any form of emulation of an online environment for them, pretending their servers they're connected up to and they can get hold of DLC or check that they've got it, blah, that kind of thing. There's going to be huge bits of games from the outgoing generation
yeah.
that no one will be able to access soon.
Yeah, 20, 30 years' time, we wouldn't even
I think
have...
it'd be less than that if, yeah. if you consider that the original Xbox Live from the the original Xbox is gone now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's going to be even sooner than that.
In its defense, there were only a very small handful of games
which were ever available to buy, and most people don't even know that because they need a specific disc to boot into it.
But the Xbox 360 in the future is where we've got a real risk now of actually, you know, unless, I mean, one would hope at least EA with the fucking sense to properly port the original Mass Effect games and all their DLC to something at some point.
It's called a PC.
Yeah. But, you know, if you wanted to, I still would rather play it with a console controller though. But
Well, you can. But
imagine trying to play certainly the Forza games that came out, like the 360 one, that had so much DLC
that you wouldn't be able to...
Yeah.
And that is where pirates are our friends. Because I know it's stupid, but this is the situation that the legal eagles and arseholes and software publishers who only care about selling their thing the first time round. And that's all they care about. They don't care about after sales or anything like that. They don't care about swapping one game to another. As far as they're concerned, that's a horrible thing that should stop and you should just buy it again.
But then, of course, they're not providing it again.
Well, exactly. That's part of the reason why when Microsoft unveiled the Xbox One and said it's completely not backwards compatible, my attitude was, well, fuck you then. Yeah. I have absolutely no investment in buying the new platform. Because you just told me that none of my stuff will work on it.
It's kind of sad to see that.
Keep your new system.
It's kind of sad to see that PlayStation 4 and Xbox One have been the same kind of thing. I mean, backwards compatibility. There was backwards compatibility with PS2 to the PS1. There was with the first generation of PS3s to PS2s, and obviously Nintendo first got into backwards compatibility with the Wii. Even then, it's like anything older than GameCube games, it was like a download.
And that was emulation rather than backwards compatibility. But yeah, technically, the reason that the SNES was incredibly CPU weak and had lots of custom chips to do its whiz-bang effects was because they wanted it to be hardware backwards compatible with an S.
But you could actually
buy a cartridge adapter which would run on the SNES, and it was not an S in the adapter. So far as I know, it was mostly running on the hardware of the NES of the SNES.
Okay,
But
cool. I think we're gonna have to wrap this up now. But are we basically saying that currently the preservation of our video game history around the world is currently under threat?
Yes,
definitely.
And I'm just going to continue for a little bit, very very quickly, because it's important. This is important.
Okay.
I know there are piracy / hacking groups at the moment which are dedicated themselves to preserving the online, only available online aspects of the PS3 and the 360, and they're saying these games which are now broken.
Yeah,
they are doing their own versions, which will work independently. And I've got a feeling that come a certain point, they're going to be the only ways to actually get hold of those until they're done until the companies decide to do a HD remaster or whatever.
And even then, it won't be the same as
they'll manage to screw it up somehow.
Yeah.
No.
Well, when it comes to the really older formats, like there's the Commodore 64 and the Spectrum, a lot of the software for those would have disappeared if it was down to the publishers, because a lot of those publishers were very small, and a lot of them went under in the lifetime of those machines anyway. Ocean went onto the 16-bits as well, but that eventually got subsumed by other companies. But their software disappeared. The only reason so much of it is still available now is because there are piracy groups like Nostalgia and Remember and Hakuto Force on the Commodore 64, which were dedicated to preserving them as close as possible with loading music, loading screens, information, sometimes even going into the games and fixing bugs which were in the original ones.
Wow.
Saying, yeah, you know, you couldn't get this in this in such and such a level, or the game would break at such and such a point. Fixed it. Here we go. There's your game. And there's at least others which are doing it for other platforms as well. In fact, it was only recently with me mentioning the Bruce Lee 2 that was based semi on being a hack of the original Bruce Lee game from the mid-80s. So that wouldn't exist if it wasn't for hacking. And only at the same time, there was a version of Ultima 4 for the Commodore 64 that was released. That came out on disc only in the 80s. It was badly ported from the Apple II GS version. What this bloke did was he went into the code, scrimped literally bytes of data, because you're talking about a Commodore 64, which, you know, had a maximum of 64K RAM, rejigged it, redid routines so they would load faster and then render the screen faster and, you know, just generally look better and work better on the palette. All of that kind of thing. And then changed it so it would run from a cartridge rather than disk, so it would be instantaneous. Now, that's never going to happen officially.
No.
Because who the hell would care about the Commodore 64 version of an RPG which came out in the 80s? It's just, that's not really going to happen. But I have to say, hats off to the people who will preserve games and fix them, improve them, and make them available when they aren't available any other way. Because where the hell are you going to find a copy of Ultima 4 on a still working disc? Because remember, all magnetic media deteriorates. So even if you've got a brand spanking new unopened tape of, say, Jet Set Willy for either the Commodore 64 or the Spectrum or, you know, whatever other machine it came out on, even if you've got that and you've never touched it and you've made sure it's never been too hot, never been too cold, and you've never left it in direct light, there's a good chance that that tape will not play now. If it was up to the lawyers, then sod it.
Yeah.
Because they're not making money from it.
Yeah.
That stands down from soapbox.
Some very, very good points. And if you guys have got any opinions on this issue and you want to discuss them with us, again, you know, tweet us at nerdspodcast or email us at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. But yeah, that is all we've got time for this episode.
Sorry.
So it is good night from...
It's good night from me, ranting Retroid, otherwise known as Paul Wood, Retroid on NeoGamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night for me, Paul, aka One-Armed_Cookie. And remember, if you want Emily's view on Transformers and get her to listen to this lovely tune.
Oh, no!
All you need to do is tweet us with the hashtag TransformersRocks the 80s.
Oh, hashtag, you got the power.
I thought you said it was Transformers 80s Rocks.
That'll do then. Any three of those. Anything will do.
That's fair enough.
Hashtag arise, Rodimus Prime.
Yes.
Okay, just basically tweet at us and you know, do a hashtag of some description. We'll find it.
Sorry, anyway, not sorry.
And it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. And I'm on Twitter as at Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter, AEK6891. If you tweet that hashtag, I will find you. And you know that scene from Jane Silent Bob Strikes Back where it has baseball bats? That will happen. That will happen. I have a car now. I have a car. And I can drive it. Legally. If you want to find out what my favourite 10 video games... Not 10, I think it was actually more like 7, but my favourite video games were from the past 10 years, go check out drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. But you can find NerdAssemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk.
At the moment.
They will still have the same web address, just that we're moving from Tumblr. You can find us on Twitter at NerdsPodcast, plus we're on Facebook and Google Plus as NerdsAssemble Podcast. You can listen to us on iTunes or Stitcher if you so choose to do so. And you obviously should definitely, utterly, really should check out hexdimension.com, because we've got loads of cool stuff going up there at the moment, including some very interesting advice on how to go LARPing, which went up last week.
and also a bit of discussion on some of the new trailers that have
oh yes, come out. We've got some week. Very in-depth discussion from Matthew Heard about last week's crop of trailers. But yeah, that is it. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.